Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Happy Easter Sunday, everyone. And this is coming from the guy who didn't realize that today was Easter Sunday when I put this show together and scheduled for this time slot. I think I've said in the past, I usually don't know my butt from a hole in the ground as relates to holidays and et cetera. And I literally did not realize until just a couple of days ago when Joe brought it to my attention that, remember, this Sunday is Easter Sunday. So, first of all, we have a guest today, and before I introduce that guest, I want to apologize to the guest because, as I just said, I didn't realize this show was falling on Easter Sunday. And whatever that means to you in terms of family obligation and et cetera, I was completely oblivious of it, and so I apologize. And to the War Report faithful, this is, as I think Ed Sullivan used to say, a really big show, and I schedule it for Easter Sunday. Bad on my part. But having said that, as usual, when I mess up, it's the fault of Joe, Joan, and some other people here. Never my fault when I mess up. Deborah, and et cetera. And, of course, you know that I am joking. When I mess up, it is fully, fully on me. All right. No, it's on Brian, really, because he said, okay. He should have said, this is Easter Sunday, man. What are you talking about? I've got family. I got kids, and you want me to, I'm the Easter Bunny. You could have said something, you didn't, so it's your fault that we're doing this on this particular Sunday. And with that, folks, our guest today is Brian Crowell. You know Brian. He's been on the War Report many times, and I have always introduced him as, one, he's a veteran teacher. He's been at this for 13, 14, 15 years. He has multiple credentials. He is certified. That means he's certified in many different areas of education in terms of being able to teach his competency, et cetera. And as I said the last time he was on the show, he is probably one of the most knowledgeable, sophisticated people I know of in education policy, education law. He's versatile at the big picture, which is what we are, quote, known for here. But in this case, big picture meaning global, as well as the United States, as well as regional, city, down to the particular district level. I'm saying all this because, as I said the last time I introduced him, he is truly a person that we all need to hear from as frequently as possible because he brings a very powerful message in terms of trying to provide awareness, understanding, and, the whole paradigm here. And so with that, folks, here is Brian. Welcome, Brian.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I like Brian. He always says, sir. He always says, sir, to me. Oh, I love that. Thank you.
All right. It's a get to grandma's house day, but that's okay. I got an hour, so it's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, when we put the show together, and by the way, I said, Brian and I have been talking about doing this show for months, and finally came up with what I thought was going to be the right time, as I mentioned earlier, and that's today. When we put out our promo earlier this week about the show, and got a couple people wanting to know, what is geopolitics, and why are we doing a show on this thing that I guess a lot of people don't have an idea about? So,
interesting.
Brian,
well, it's funny. Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah. Well, geopolitics is basically politics that's influenced or dictated by geographical factors. In other words, your region of the world you live in and your resources have a direct influence on the policy in your region. So, for example, if you're talking about Syria, for example, there are two competing pipelines through Syria. One begins in Iran going to Europe, and the other one begins down by Saudi Arabia into Europe. So you have competing factions for that resource. So if you're looking at certain areas of the world, they like Afghanistan, they have minerals and natural resources. Certain areas of the world, like Africa, have diamonds. So most of the international relations that we have are based on geopolitical relationships. And those relationships may or may not coincide with the best policies of the United States or other countries. And that's basically, but also you have, the same thing happens when you get down into school districts, which we're going to get to later on. But that's basically what geopolitics is.
Again, it's politics, and politics is always in whose interest, in my interest, your interest, and et cetera. And
yes.
If you have something that is of interest to me and I want it, then that's when politics comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, as you mentioned, just allude to, we are at a very, very critical time in this whole thing of geopolitics. And let me try and give another sort of example. There's always been geopolitics, meaning that country A, country B has always had something that maybe country C wanted or country D wanted or even A and B wanted. And how do we get it? Do we go to war? Do we subterfuge? Do we do whatever we need to do to get what it is that we feel we need or we interest or we want to have? And it's geo in that it's global, what we're talking about. The political, everyone will get. And when I said earlier that we are in perhaps one of the most critical crisis geopolitical times that we've been in a long, long time, I'm thinking specifically about World War II.
Right,
Brian,
I agree.
I know you and I have talked about this quite extensively. Take us back to that period and geopolitics and how that really relates to where we are today. I think that would give people a better understanding of what it is we're going to talk about later.
Yeah, I would encourage all your readers, if they're into reading, they need to go get the book entitled As He Saw It by General Elliot Roosevelt. Elliot Roosevelt was FDR's son, and it is basically a primary
source. Franklin Delano Roosevelt's son.
That's right. And it's a primary source book about all the relationships and haggling and fights that FDR had with Churchill and Stalin. We're going back to 1943, and they were trying to determine how the world would look after 1943. So very fabulous book that most people don't know about this history. So at this time period, FDR got into World War II. Many people don't know this. FDR says to Churchill, I will support you in getting rid of Hitler if you agree to give up your colonies. And the colonies, you know, at that time, it wasn't the British Commonwealth. It was the British Empire. And so FDR says to Winston Churchill, you have to give up India, France, you have to give up Indochina, you have to give up your favorite colonial trade agreements that have gone back hundreds of years, back to Winston. You have to give up Hong Kong and give it back to China. So FDR's goal was to free all the former colonies and free these countries from the colonial system and use the United Nations as the arbiter of disputes between nations. This was a very idealistic dream by FDR that he had, and that the idea was, is if we can have sort of a win-win collaboration, in other words, if we can get beyond just taking resources from countries and actually having win-win trade agreements, win-win social agreements, we can stop the next war. So it's fascinating in the book, as early as 1943, FDR surmised and had a lot of foresight. He said, we don't get this right now, there's going to be the next war in perpetuity. He predicted the Vietnam War as early as 1943, and he also predicted the Cold War, which was not his intention. And so even though I think after World War II, we were basically the last country standing. We weren't bombed and destroyed. And so what happened is we became the superpower by default. And literally overnight, Stalin became the bad guy, went from our ally to the bad guy. And he saw what happened right away. We had the Korean War. Later we had the Vietnam War. Obviously we had the Iron Curtain, which was a creation of Churchill. And so unfortunately, we are right back where we were again at 1943, where Russia is the bad guy again, and there is no agreement or consensus to agree on anything. And the standard mechanisms of detente means we'll agree not to blow each other up, those agreements, unfortunately, have all withered away. And so we're in a very dangerous geopolitical time with this asinine guy Trump in office. And so it's very interesting we're having this show today on Easter. I haven't seen the relations in countries this bad, and I'm only 39, but historically speaking, not since the beginning of World War II. And that's the context that I'm speaking from.
Okay. I have to get this in, Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have anything to do with this in 43, okay? I was born in 43. I didn't have anything to do with this, people. I know you guys say I'm old as dirt, and I had something to do with everything, the Hindenburg, and you name it. I didn't. Okay, I just want to make sure I get that out there.
Yeah.
Here is something.
Yes, sir.
Brian, to my audience, man, okay, they're loyal as you can get, but they also probably taking bets in terms of whether or not, as I think I have said before, that,
sure.
Did I know Moses? Did I know Moses? Or was I back in time of the dinosaurs? And I have to, every once in a while, let people know, no, but I did have a T-Rex. Beautiful little thing until he started eating the neighbors next door. I had to get rid of him. But other than that, no, I didn't have anything to do with a lot of things that took place over the last 2,000 plus years in history. And this is just one of them. It is so interesting. This is why, again, we have been talking about during this particular show. And unfortunately, as I said, I happened to schedule it on Easter weekend. It was because as Brian and I both look at things and we're seeing what's going on the geopolitical global level, I also peg it to what's going on here in the United States in public education.
Yes.
And I won't say fascinating because that would make it sound like fascinating, interesting, and but it's devastatingly fascinating in that what I'm seeing in my understanding of history. Folks, this is exactly what is happening to public education in this country. Not geo, although what is happening to us is a global phenomena. There is this,
yes.
as I've said, I don't know how many times, this war on public education is a global war. I've said, budget-wise, and this is what I think is driving this, the budget-wise, we spend from pre-K to PhD estimated in the area of $1.2 to $1.3 $5 trillion a year. Globally, $7 trillion a year. There are people who want their hands on that budget. And, of course, as I said previously, if they get their hands on it nationally, locally, regionally, and then globally, I bet anything that national budget of 1.2 to 1.5 will go to $2 trillion. It'll go to $3 trillion because they will be sucking the resources out of the country for the purpose of filling their coffers at the expense of the education of tens of millions of students.
That's right.
So that's one of the main reasons. Again, I don't want to jump ahead, Brian, too far, because we are going to bring all of this to some very important questions here about as it relates to education, as it relates to teachers, as it relates to parents, and et cetera. But I think the more background information we share as we move towards our final destination here, the better it's going to be for everyone who is listening. And especially since, again, the day is Easter, and I don't know how many people are listening at this particular time versus maybe going to the archives.
But right, right.
We tend to have some really good, loyal people who, even on the holidays, they will be here. So let's make sure they get as much out of this as we can in terms of understanding why this topic is so important to you and I and why it should be to them. Okay, Brian, continue to where you were, because this is your baby. This is what gets you pissed off.
Well, again, I think we're talking about World War II, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Most people think that we won World War II outright. And, you know, but that's actually, in a lot of ways, it's not exactly all the way true. If you look at what happened, the goal of World War II with FDR is we're going to set up international relations in the world system to stop the geopolitical conflict. However, as you've seen, since World War II, I lost count of how many wars the United States and other countries have been involved in on a limited basis. I mean, in other words, it's kind of like the old British wars in Europe. You know, you had the 30 Years' War, then the 7 Years' War, then the, you know, you were always at war. And unfortunately, that's where we've been. And it's because our policy, in my view, has been kind of a might is right type of thing. We're the bully. We're going to run you over. And in doing so, you create more geopolitical chaos, which in turn creates more conflict. Obviously, President Eisenhower warned about the use of the military and things of that nature. And so, unfortunately, we have not heeded the wise words of the past. So we fast forward. This is why now it is too easy for us to get into conflict with other countries. Because, again, there's no agreement to disagree. There's no agreement to find common ground. And the pillars of our democratic society I see unwinding in a way that's very disturbing. And that's what I'm talking about. So, you know, it's not very sophisticated or difficult to understand. But again, the point of World War II was to end the mechanisms for war. Now, we fast forward, now we have this war on public education, and it coincides with what I'm seeing on the global scale.
And I'll just give you a hint to where we're going to go on this.
Mm-hmm.
Things that we've talked about, I want you, as I said last week, think how any of this applies, if it does in any way, with the war on public education. Brian and I have been talking now 20 minutes, and I think we've dropped a lot of information that directly relates to the war on public education. And if you are with us, I want you to stay with us in this vein in terms of how anything that we say could it relate to public education, to you as a teacher, to you as a parent, to you as a citizen, and then understanding the why of the war, the bigger picture of the war. Just a hint. Think about it.
Right.
And, okay. Right. Now, Brian.
Well, let's get deep into this. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Wait, no, you go ahead.
Yeah. Well, let's get deep into this. So the point of public education history, in my view, is to look at not only the triumphs of your country, but also the challenges. And if you can do that, you can reflect on the mistakes of the past and create policies to do better. So, for example, when you're talking about public education and curriculum, we should be talking about Wounded Knee. As you know, Wounded Knee, the 1973 standoff at the Native American reservations, issues of corruption, issues of the water being poisoned. That is something should be taught in public education, for example. We should be talking about the Quakers. The Quakers, as you know, largely ran the Underground Railroad during slavery, but the Quakers are not in the textbooks or mentioned or given credit to running the Underground Railroad in slavery. Issues like that. So, in other words, proper history, history that will help us grow and move forward, has been systematically taken out of the curriculum, which is very disturbing. Another thing I'm seeing is just the civic participation in school board meetings. I like to look at school board meetings in Florida and other states, obviously locally where I am in the Bay Area. School board meetings are largely empty. The public is not having any input on policy. A lot of schools are supposed to have a school site council, a faculty council, to discuss issues that deal with their specific school. Are those boards and committees are not filled? There's no participation from the parents. And so all these mechanisms, and I believe in democracy is one thing, but you have to have functioning mechanisms of democracy. And public education is the ground floor for all these things to take place. And that's what I'm talking about, this war on public education. The war is a war to erode the pillars and the mechanisms to keep our society civic. And when you look at how countries are behaving vis-a-vis one another geopolitically, notice the civic engagement is lost. And that's the parallel that I'm talking about.
Yes.
And it's an erosion, because now when you're looking at young people, they tend to be a little more jaded, tend to be not as trusting of the government, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing, but they've never seen government actually function. And they have high student loan debt, and they see it increasingly more difficult for economic viability and all these different things. And this happens when you start to erode the public education system. We're seeing, as you talked about, budget cuts now. Over here in Oakland, they're cutting the art program, cutting the after-school program. Things that will create civic society are being eroded. And that's the war. That's why we have Betsy DeVos as Secretary of Education. And so this is not a partisan thing. I want your listeners to understand that. I don't play the D versus R. I definitely consider myself on the traditional left. I am not a right winger. But I don't play the D versus R game. I don't do that. And I don't play the neoliberal versus neoconservative game. What I'm concerned about is, are we doing our job, and so the next generation can have a chance to move our society forward, which is the business of society, and that is the anchor of public education. Increasingly, and I must say, specifically with Berkeley, where I'm based, the lack of acknowledgement of the elected officials to be responsive to the needs of the constituency is exactly what I'm talking about on a local level. So you have a broad disconnect of the mission of public education and the mission to destroy it.
This is, and I hesitate only because I don't know how, 1,000 times, 2,000 times. This is the essence of war, is what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. When we talk about geopolitical, that's another word for war. It could be active boot on the ground. It could be political maneuvering. It could be like we have seen in the past in this country when Bush said that the Hussein had nuclear weapons.
Weapons of mass destruction. Yes. Yes.
And hence that was the reason for having to invade. Bush,
right.
I mean Trump, this past week, dropped the mother of all mothers of non-nuclear, I love the way it was described in the media, the mother
right.
of all
right.
bombs on Syria because of what Syria was supposed to have done in terms of chemical weapons.
Actually the mother of all bombs, that was actually Afghanistan, but you're right, he's kind of accelerating, yeah. So mother of all bombs was Afghanistan, and then we had the dropping the bombs on the Syrian air base because of the alleged chemical weapons attack. And I say alleged because, you know, usually, you know, Assad is winning, so if you're winning, why are you going to drop chemical weapons if you're winning? That's just, I just have a question. You know, if you're winning, why do you need to drop chemical weapons? You know, that's just my question.
You're trying to be so diplomatic.
This is so funny to me because
we don't usually go there. We just say it the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, when I'm being honest, I was reading all these Washington Post articles from 4 years ago, and the UN and the United States and Russia is all boasting Assad turned in all of his chemical weapons. Well, if he turned them all in, what did he do? He went to Walmart and bought some more? I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, you know, I have to give a lot of credit to Noam Chomsky, who was on Democracy Now!, the Pacifica Network. He was getting interviewed. This was a week before Trump dropped the bomb on Syria, and he said, look for a Reichstag fire event because Trump's poll numbers are low. And he needs something to distract from his failing presidency. And a week later, he drops the bomb on Syria, and all of a sudden he's being praised by the media. And, you know, I, if your listeners don't understand the Reichstag fire, I can go into that if you want me to.
Please do.
The Reichstag fire event was going back to the Wehrmacht, which was the German parliament in the 30s. And Hitler desperately was trying to get dictatorial powers. He wanted dictatorial powers. And so what he did is he set the German parliament on fire, and he blamed the communists, okay? And in doing so, he basically forced the Social Democratic Party to capitulate and give him dictatorial powers. That's exactly how that happened. And so now when everyone says the term Reichstag fire, it is essentially an event that's used to distract from something else. Obviously, you talked about WMD in Iraq. That's another Reichstag fire event that obviously was used for other geopolitical purposes. So, you know, that's unfortunate that, again, that's not covered in the history books, but it absolutely should be.
Well, let me interject.
Mm-hmm.
I said, and again, when I use the phrase I'm about to use, we've been on the air 3 years plus now.
Yes.
And we've done maybe 200 hours at least of shows.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have been with us from the very beginning. And so some of the things that I'll say every once in a while, they've already heard. And I'm very mindful of that. But what I'm about to say, I've said many, many times. We can go back through history. Sitting presidents,
yes,
would-be presidents, have always resorted to some kind of war, be it, you know, full of lies, to get a war started, to become a partner in a war, and to start a war, escalate a war when it comes time for re-election, and et cetera.
Yes.
War has been, and lies and innuendos and treachery has been a main weapon of political power seekers forever. And again, think about here at our situation now in public education.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers are bad.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The curriculum is bad. Public schools are bad.
Right.
Parents who are not preparing their kids for getting the best out of education are bad. And hence, we need this war. They don't call it a war, but we need this war as a solution to deal with the badness and to turn things around. Without this war and out a massive war on so many fronts, public education is going to continue to fail our children. And back to a nation at risk, when there's a statement in there saying that if what is happening to public education was done by a foreign power, we would call it, what was the exact words? Basically, it would be an act of war if it was, these things were being perpetrated by a foreign power. And so it's war, and I say this all the time, we're in a war in public education. And as I said earlier in the show, think about what you're hearing from Brian and myself and apply it in this framework of war.
Right. Yeah.
Parallels.
Yeah.
Parallels galore.
Yeah, and I think a big part, when you're looking at talking about public education, big-time demoralization. I can't tell you how many teachers are going out on medical leave, stress leave, a medical leave of absence for a year, early retirement. Let's parallel that to the military, suicides, PTSD, you know, the veterans' affairs. You know what I'm talking about. Direct parallels. It's the constant demoralization of the base of society. We need desperately for teachers and educators to start participating in their profession as professionals. They need to start making sure these committees are staffed, making sure the school board is accountable to the community, making sure the teachers take major curriculum needs to their state legislatures, county boards of education. Democracy only works if you participate. But I think the war tactic that's used by the opposition against public education is to demoralize you to the point where you don't think the system can work. See, if you're demoralized, you don't want to get up and act on behalf of and do what you know you should do. And that's the part we have to fight. That's denialism. And that's what I'm saying. You're actually fighting your will to fight the war on public education. So with Betsy DeVos specifically, in her policy, it's interesting. Betsy DeVos, I was reading, they're spending millions of dollars for the U.S. Marshals to have security for her. You know, so she hasn't yet set foot on a lot of campuses yet. I don't know if she's coming out to California or where. If she does, I would surmise she'd probably have a lot of peaceful protests waiting for her. But Betsy DeVos wants to basically shut down all the public schools, replace them with charter schools. Charter schools, as you know, are usually not accountable in any major way to the school boards or county boards that approve the charter. So again, you're eroding the accountability to the public. That's what she wants. You can erode the accountability to the public, then you can rob and steal, which is what you were talking about. Okay, now we're going to start taking public school assets, buildings, selling them off to the highest bidder, cutting these programs, selling them off to the highest bidder, and that's what she wants to do. so far, interestingly enough, she has not quite figured out how to do it because there's so much opposition to her. But that's basically what you want and what's going on. That's where the war is being fought.
But she's a newcomer in the sense that she's new into her job as the Secretary of Education. Of course, she's been
correct
at this for a very, very long time in terms of her access to hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars, if she wants to help
yes
prosecute the war along the lines that she wants to see it fall. That is so very true.
Mm-hmm.
But here is, again, going back to our subject of this geopolitics and this notion of what we have not said, and you alluded to when you talked about Churchill, Stalin, but particularly conversations between Roosevelt and Churchill.
Yes.
And the notion of Britain as an empire.
Yes.
The British Empire that has
yes
been there for several hundred years.
Yes.
And that Churchill was saying to Roosevelt, if you don't, you being the U.S., don't come into the war and we lose this war, you're going to lose as well, because there will be nothing stopping the Germans from coming to America as it seeks to, as Hitler is famous for saying, the Third Reich. And as
yes
I have said many times, Reich in German means empire. That's what Hitler was all about, was creating an empire. And Churchill was all about protecting the empire.
Yes.
And that the agreement that came out of was the Atlantic
Atlantic Charter.
That basically,
Atlantic
yeah,
Charter.
Charter that came
yes
out where
yes
Churchill goes into these secret meetings with Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
And he says to him, basically, dude, at the end of this war, and we win, we're protecting the empire here. We want to resume our empire. And Roosevelt is saying, no, that's 16th, 17th, 18th century thinking.
That is correct. Page 36 of the book. That's right.
I read the book, man. Okay.
I know.
Oh, and by
I know
the way, let me just say something, folks. Let me just say something. Brian has been trying to get me to read this book for I don't know how long. And so for Christmas, he bought me a copy of the book and said, you've got to read it. So now, because I bought you this book. And he sent it to me from California to here to Buffalo. And then he stopped talking to me. Every time he was talking to me, he said, you read the book yet? You read the book yet? You read the book yet? Brian, I got a life outside of, you know, but did you read the book yet? And finally, he just stopped talking to me. And finally, when I came up and said, okay, I'll have the book read by X, and we're ready for the show, is when he resumed talking to me. Yes, Brian, I read the book. I can quote you page, chapter, verse, et cetera. All right?
Yeah, just testing
that,
it. Yeah,
that,
go ahead.
That's a very important part right here, that when I started the War Report, Brian, I don't know if you mm-hmm were around in terms of listening to the War Report when it first started, I talked about what I call the New Reich. I didn't give mm-hmm it a number like Hitler.
Okay.
And I said the
mm-hmm
New Reich was, and that Reich meant, you know, empire. It was the New
yes
Reich here was neoliberalism, and it
yes
was the corporate state, philanthropic, financial, political elite, and their minions.
Yes.
And they're what I call the Machiavellian agenda, and what that agenda really entailed, and what its end goal was all about. And the end goal is empire.
Yes.
Plain and simple. And how they plan to get there, and the role that public education plays in their overall agenda to eventually achieve an empire that, like the Roman Empire, will last 1,000 years.
That's right.
So that, again, going back to, I always like to to tie the issue of today with issues of yesterday, and I'm always quoting my favorite Edmund Burke, he who doesn't know history is doomed to repeat it. Mm-hmm. And that's what this show is all about, you and I telling people about World War II and about the reason why World War II really was fought and how the U.S. got involved. And what we're seeing today is a continuation of World War II, folks.
Absolutely. And more specifically, and this must be said, is and Elliot Roosevelt is right, after FDR died, President Truman essentially surrendered FDR's opposition to the empire and essentially gave us back to Britain, back to Churchill. Churchill commenced to start the Iron Curtain. Churchill commenced to start NATO. Churchill commenced to start the Cold War, which was not the intention of FDR by any stretch of the imagination. And if you look at all the geopolitical events since then, Israeli-Palestine, Korea, Syria, Indochina, which was, as you know, now called Vietnam, all these events, FDR totally predicted, unfortunately, if he was not successful. So even though we got the Marshall Plan, 90% of 90% of FDR's plan for the post-war war did not come true. And so now that's why I say we are right back where we started, you know, at this crossroads. Are we going to finish what FDR had in mind, or are we going to continue down this very dangerous path? Because if you look at what's going on, the same geopolitical powers from World War II are the same geopolitical powers that are feuding today. And and we're talking 75 years later. And again, in our schools, this is where these dialectical discussions can be fleshed out. This is where these dialectical discussions can be discussed. And the job of DeVos is to make sure these discussions don't happen. And that's what we're fighting. That's where the war, because remember, public education is the only place for all people from different colors, creeds, socioeconomic backgrounds can converge in one place and discuss ideas. That's the only place it can happen. If you take that away, these broader questions won't be discussed. And that's what I'm always cognizant of.
And that's what one of the issues that we were going to talk about, and that is, you know, the school curriculum, a deep look at the postmodern history of global politics and public school curriculum, with the question being, the issue for teachers and for the public education is, what is allowed into our curriculum? And yes, go a step further, who decides?
Right.
And that's the question, who decides? And I'll go back to something that I've said many times before. Both Hitler and Stalin, they're quoted as saying, basically, he who controls the curriculum controls the future, but they also control the past. He who wins the war rewrites the past.
That's right.
And he who wins the war can obliterate everything that they don't want the public to know going forward from history. And we're seeing that now.
Yes.
That,
yeah, there's this misconception. I didn't mean to cut you off, but there is this conception that somehow FDR and Churchill had this wonderful relationship, that there was a special relationship between the United States and Britain, when the truth of reality, when you read this book, FDR couldn't stand Churchill. He didn't like Queen Victoria. He thought that Europeans were hopelessly dysfunctional because of World War One and all the wars that they had fought against each other. So there was a lot of truth in that, and he thought that Europe, because of their past and because of their colonial economic system, was in fact the cause of the rise of Hitler. So he saw a lot of fault, you know. But again, that is not discussed in the standard curriculum at all. You have to go deep into the archives to find it.
And here's something else, Brian. And going through the book, I kept saying to myself, he's not talking about the racism that's been 400 years in the making here in his own country. That's Eliot
Correct.
Talking about his father.
Yes.
Roosevelt was not this great progressive liberal, especially as it relates to race. A lot
no.
of the policies that came out of the New Deal were racist as hell.
Yes.
And that's a whole different place to go. But what I want to do now is we got
sure.
less than 10 minutes to go. I'm going to pop out some mm-hmm. questions, and I want you to try and give a 30-second type answer so that, again, make sure that our audience got what we were seeking to do today. And
sure.
we talked about geopolitics. We've talked about what it means. And question would be, as a teacher or as a parent, why should I care about geopolitics?
Yes. You're going to have some callers, or?
No, they're not going to call. It's a holiday. Nobody's there but you and I.
Oh, okay, okay. You want me to? What did you want me to answer first?
Yeah. Okay. As a teacher, as a parent, why should I care about geopolitics?
Well, you should care because in democracy, you're supposed to have the consent of the governed. And if you're not active in knowledge about geopolitical events, your congressman may not vote the way he or she should. And so that is why there's a direct link with geopolitics. You want to make sure that Congress is voting and acting on the way that you elected them to do, not that when they get in there, they just do whatever they want. And that's the connection to geopolitics. It's every American should be tied into geopolitics in that way, because it does affect what happens to us.
Next question.
Mm-hmm.
What does it have to do with me as a teacher, as a parent, as a citizen, and public education?
As a teacher, teachers thrive on empowerment. If teachers are given opportunities to be creative, particularly with how they deliver curriculum, particularly with new projects, new way of delivering curriculum, what is in the curriculum, teachers need to constantly replenish themselves. That's what makes it special. And if they can't do that, then it becomes a morbid job instead of a passion. And that's why it's important. And that's what I'm seeing the biggest fight is teachers feel the job makes them tired, whereas before they couldn't wait to get up and go to work and teach their class. As a parent, you are constantly concerned about how your son or daughter is going to grow up, how they're going to live as civic citizens, whether or not the public schools have done a good enough job. So as a parent, you're absolutely connected. And as a student, are you going to be jaded when you come out of high school? That's the biggest fear I have for the next generation, that they'll just be jaded and just simply won't care. Plug into the PlayStation and that's it.
Okay, next question.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this, but I see a major issue in what you and I are trying to get over today is what you said earlier and I said, and that public lack of awareness, public lack of understanding, public lack of participation.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I've been advocating on the show and also here in Buffalo is that I want to see more teachers get involved, actively involved in geopolitics as it relates to public education and the war that's being waged here in this country, and I'll make geo being the United States. And I also
yes.
want to see more teachers go for school board, especially our retirees.
Yes.
Go and
yes.
run for school board. Go and run for state assembly, state senate. Go and run for even the mayor, city council.
Yes.
We have a voice. And damn it, we're the ones that in hundreds and hundreds of years gone by, when the war was lost and the victors, they would go and find the learned people,
yes.
teachers, the priests, the doctors, the people who had the education, the people who pose the biggest threat in terms of turning the public against them in their victory. And they'd execute them. They'd put them in prison.
That's right.
How valued a teacher could be and should be, especially during a time of war. And I would love to see more of that. I mean, absolutely, to me, that's imperative. Also, teachers advocating for curriculum, even if you have to go to the state legislatures and wherever to pressure the state legislature to back off of the stifling of the curriculum, back off of teachers' creativity and ability to teach to the student as opposed to the test. And if you look at, again, in the geopolitics thing, this is all politics. War is politics.
Yes,
surviving
absolutely.
War is politics. This is all present. And I don't want to mean like I'm on a soap opera here, but, of course, this has been a rally cry for forever. And this question of who should decide the curriculum, because it's a curriculum, folks, and I'm preaching to the choir when I talk to teachers. It's the curriculum. That's the main thing that we have, is the curriculum.
And, you know, it's funny you mention that. I've heard school board members say indirectly, and I'll say this on the air, I've heard school board members say indirectly that administrators should decide curriculum. Teachers aren't, you know, teachers are only the delivery systems. They shouldn't have any input on curriculum, even though they're in the classroom with the students every day. And that's the kind of asinine thinking I'm talking about. Because it's not only the curriculum that moves a student, it also, the curriculum what allows teachers to adjust when students are struggling. Adjusting the curriculum, how can I reach more students? How can I reach more students of color? How can I reach students with special needs? That's why the curriculum is so important. It's not only makes you free, it also ties everything together and helps you give instruction to students who are struggling. That's even more important, and it'd be a tragedy if that's taken away. And so and you're right. Who gets to decide the curriculum? Also decides the type of students you have coming out of your institutions and what their interests are.
Brian, I'm going to give you the last 30, 45 seconds, and I'll wrap it up with my 45 seconds.
Well,
what's the message you want to? People to take away from this hour?
I want teachers to start to recognize their own power and influence that they have in their school sites, in their communities, and overcome the demonization of the profession. I want teachers to get the confidence in themselves. That's what I really want, because I've run through so many teachers whose confidence has been taken away. These are former Teachers of the Year, former Teachers of the Year in their school, or former Teacher of the Year in their county, and something has happened to them where they've been bullied or attacked, and their confidence has been taken away. That's what I want.
Okay. Folks, what you know what I'm going to say. This hour basically has been talking about the war on public education here in America as if it is part of a geopolitical event. It is geopolitical in that, yes, what is happening in the larger world is also shaping what is happening here in America. They are connected. They are deeply connected. The notion of interest, the notion of power, the notion of empire. We are being warred upon. It's part of a global war. It's part of the geopolitical global war. And we need to wake up to this, and as Brian has said, we have to get our confidence back if that's what we're missing, but we have to get engaged. And if nothing else from this conversation, I wanted to give you some of the history. even though it was only a 75-year history. That history is continuing today. The war from World War II, and as I said many, many times, basically, you can go back, at least I can go back to 1607, 1609, when
Europeans came to this country.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah, before the peace was
given. This is what geopolitics is about. And it's been continuous. And teachers, next month is Teacher Appreciation Week. We do the whole month, you know that, 4 or 5 shows and et cetera. And I'm going to go more and more and more into this, that we have and should have and we must have play a bigger role in shaping the outcome of this war that we are experiencing. Because if we don't, obviously we're going to lose if we haven't already. And then this show is part of the wake-up call that we've been preaching here for the last 3 years plus. Brian, thank you so much for being here on this holiday. I'm sorry again for scheduling this day. And for the rest of you out there, as usual, thank you as always, and especially those of you who try to listen in during your holiday period. Thanks, everyone. Have a good rest of, I always say Sunday, but in this case, have a good rest of Easter Sunday to each and every one. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, sir. All right. Bye.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.